last night when you closed the door behind you? Were you walking in your sleep, or were you just too tired to notice all the watchful eyes upon you? There's the man who does the maintenance and the maid who cleans the carpets in the hall, and the guard down in the lobby through a hidden TV camera saw it all. I've observed your nervous habits and your random dancing patterns, and I've learned you're not a nice guy, and your phony face deception is your secret silent weapon. This little birdie told me who was talking to a fly upon the wall. So when you think nobody's looking, I'm the eye that passes by you. When you think nobody's listening, I'm the listener. I'm the resistor.
Insurgent resistor. How about that? Let me get this audio adjusted here a little bit. This has been a sort of a confusing day around here. We're doing some changes in the bunker, changing some of our electronics and changing servers and so forth and so on. So I've had a technician in here from the satellite company this morning. Was in here a couple, 3 hours. And I got to hook up, redo the internet thing in the next few days. I thought it was going to do it all at once, but we just changed over the television first. So anyhow, I'm here, and that's it. But one thing we're going to do, and should be no problem, we're going to eliminate the 574-267-5036. Telephone line. It complicates things with the new system, but we've got this number that's that I can put a lot more information on, 559-670-1473. Write that down, and you can write it down on all the toilet walls you want to, on the job site and whatever. And we've got a reserve number too, which is 641-715-3800, but that one you have to press in a passcode, which is 56890 star. And but anyhow, the main phone line from now on, after this phone line is cut off here, will be 559-670-1473. So tell your buddies that like to call up that line that won't be long till they'll call up, and nobody going to answer. Nobody going to be there. It'd be gone. It's been a while since we've had old Jim Hightower, that populist, on here. Let's see what he's up to now.
That it's not all bad news these days. Take the federal minimum wage of $7.25 an hour. Please. That's a poverty wage, a shameful stain on our extremely rich nation. But don't count on Washington to lift our wage floor. Indeed, pig-headed Republican Congress critters obdurately refuse to consider it, even declaring there should be no wage floor to sustain America's middle-class framework. So where's the good news? Probably right where you live. Millions of low-wage workers themselves, from fast food workers to adjunct college professors, have been organizing and mobilizing, pushing local leaders to take action against the immoral inequality that's ripping our society apart and sinking our economy. Sure enough, local officials are responding. Seattle, Chicago, New York City, Austin, Providence, San Francisco, and even Oklahoma City, as well as other locales, either have raised their wage floors or are battling the corporate lobbyists to get the job done. And here's a pleasant surprise. Breaking away from the McDonald's, Domino, Taco Bell herd of low-wage exploiters, several smaller fast food chains are acting on their own, raising their starting pay levels as high as $15 an hour plus benefits. The Boloco Burrito chain in New England, for example, has raised its minimum to $9 an hour, plus subsidizing its employees' commuting costs and contributing to their 401k fund. A Boloco co-founder says, "If we're talking about building a business that's successful, but our employees can't go home and pay their bills, to me, that success is a farce." This is Jim Hightower saying, "Exactly. If you can't pay your workers a decent wage, then you don't have a legitimate business." The multi-million dollar executives at poverty pay outfits like McDonald's aren't running a business. They're running a labor extortion racket.
Well, he puts it pretty much on the line out there for the working man. I appreciate his input. Here you go, man. Eric Holder to investigate racist parade float. This might be a joke, but I'm not sure. Nowadays, you never know. During an Independence Day parade in Nebraska, there was a parade float with a caricature of Barack Obama, President of the United States, standing in front of an outhouse. The outhouse was labeled as Barack Obama's Presidential Library. Eric Holder, Secretary of State, no, he's Attorney General, isn't he, has announced he will be sending a team to Nebraska to investigate the parade float. I think that's a tongue-in-cheeker, but you never know. Well, let's go back to law school a little bit here and get the straight scoop on lawyers who never practiced law and never got paid.
California, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people practicing criminal law, though they've never passed a bar exam. They don't wear suits, they don't have secretaries, and they actually can't bill for their time. They're jailhouse lawyers, inmates who pursue the equivalent of a lawyer's education, and who work as lawyers from within prison walls.
That's usually almost jailhouse lawyers cut their teeth, I think, because they dig into their own case and they get an interest in it, and then they become well-versed in the law by usually reading volumes of cases.
That's Charles Carbone. He's a prisoner rights attorney in San Francisco and one of the few lawyers on the outside who will represent people behind bars pro bono or for free after they've been convicted.
It is a professional and personal interest of mine. I take it very seriously in terms of the quality representation that I provide.
Carbone explains that in California, once you've been tried, convicted, and sent to prison, at that point, you lose your right to an attorney who's provided by and paid for by the state. If you're on death row, the state will still pay for an attorney to represent you for an appeal. But if you're not and you want to challenge your sentence, you have to come up with the money yourself to hire a private attorney.
There are very few lawyers or firms that provide pro bono parole appeal representation. Very, very, very few. You can count them on one hand, those numbers of cases that are brought every year by a pro bono attorney or firm.
So Carbone says, short of turning to people like him, prisoners have to teach themselves the law, and many do. Ruben Ruiz Martinez is serving time at Pelican Bay, a supermax prison in the far north of California. I have to get through 11 locked doors and sally ports just to interview him.
We are in security housing.
Is this another sally port?
No.
Hello. How are you?
Hey, how about
yourself? The cell is about 6 by 9 feet. There's a thick cement pad for a bed, and it looks like it's full of papers and books, at least from where I can see it.
My name is Nancy Mullane. I'm a reporter. I
I'm not used to seeing somebody. I'm trying to see your eyes.
I'm standing on the other side of a rust-colored metal door filled with small, perforated holes. Martinez is a middle-aged man with military-style cropped hair, deep-set brown eyes, and a full, gentle mouth.
I didn't know any law. I didn't know even the law that I was charged with and convicted of. I was 17. I had just turned 17. I was a kid. And from that moment on,
Martinez is serving a life sentence without the possibility of parole.
It was a fight in a liquor store. We didn't see no clerks around, so we were going to try to run out with the beer, which you probably might have heard is known as a beer run. In our attempt to do so, we were confronted by the clerks of the store. They physically confronted us. We didn't have no weapons. One of them had a baseball bat and hit us with the baseball bat. And in that fight, we took the bat. And one of them subsequently got hit in the head with the bat and later died. Cause of death was, you know, a blow to the head.
Martinez was convicted of felony murder. That's when you're out with someone and you commit a felony together. If anyone dies, then you're responsible for that murder, even if you didn't actually commit it.
I had no concept of what, you know, felony murder was. You know, self-defense is not a defense against the felony murder rule when it is under just normal circumstances. It was a much greater likelihood that I would have been convicted of voluntary manslaughter and maybe would have been 4 or 6 years.
Martinez understands that now, but says he didn't 21 years ago when he was charged, convicted, and sent to prison.
I was represented by a couple of different attorneys, and I learned the arguments they were making were arguments that already had been made in other instances and failed. So I started to, you know, follow up on all of the law that, you know, they cited in my lawsuits, just researching it, I guess, in a backwards fashion.
Martinez decided to file his own appeal.
I started to look for ways in which I could reintroduce, you know, some claims of my own.
So, were you successful?
No.
He partly blames bad access to the legal materials he needed at Pelican Bay.
I actually rarely, if ever, go to the law library. Most of the legal research I do is through the paging system. There's forms in which you could request particular case law. You submit a request to go to the law library. It usually takes between a month to 2 months, and that just doesn't suffice to do the necessary research on whatever you're doing.
There are people that are very well versed in the law, inmates who are fairly well studied in the law, pretty good at research and writing and legal drafting and so forth, and then there are other inmates that are absolutely atrocious at it, and the courts don't receive it well.
Again, prisoner rights attorney Charles Carbone.
Their cases get denied, and the problem is that then they can't backtrack, because you really only get one bite at these apples. You don't get three or four. So if you show up on your own and you file a piece of garbage, you oftentimes cannot revisit that later.
Carbone says that's the problem for Ruben Martinez and thousands of other inmates trying to appeal their convictions. If the judge says the appeal doesn't have merit, that's it. The inmates can't file another appeal based on the same challenge. Prison law libraries are supposed to help inmates get that one bite at the legal apple.
And most of the law libraries inside prison are filled with old law books that have been torn up and are very cumbersome and difficult to use. They have very little resources, and sometimes that affects the quality of the work. Sometimes, miraculously, it doesn't.
Under California law, all inmates in state prisons are supposed to get at least 4 hours a week of access to a prison law library. Obviously, that's not been working out so well for Ruben Martinez, who says he has to wait 2 to 3 months to get inside the law library at Pelican Bay. San Quentin State Prison, just outside San Francisco, is supposed to have the best law library in the whole state. One Tuesday morning, San Quentin's public information officer, Sergeant Gabe Walters, agrees to show off the library. As we get close to the front door, we see more than a dozen inmates standing outside, holding worn file folders stuffed with papers and booklets.
They don't hold it forever. up right now. They put a new schedule up right now. So,
new schedule?
Yeah. So let's see, what's going on here?
This is new schedules of last night.
Yeah.
Last night?
Since last week.
The press officer is a little embarrassed.
So, okay.
Oh, that's horrible. I didn't know they changed the schedule.
Yeah, they just did it last week.
The law library is open a few days later.
Can I get a copy of this front and back and one copy of this?
It may be new, but it's cramped. Prisoners huddle at small round tables taking notes and poring over legal documents.
Thank you.
It's unfortunate that most of us who get in trouble with the law don't know much about the law until after we've, you know, gotten to a situation that we need help to get out of.
This is Laquan Hayes.
I've been coming to the law library for the last 10 years that I've been incarcerated. They discovered that actually my sentence was an error.
A judge recently found in Hayes' favor and overturned his case on appeal. Now, because of a writ that he wrote, he's going home.
We, you know, begin to read our own cases, and we come to the library, and we ask others for advice, and we kind of rely on one another. And then we begin to get an understanding of the law. And I think it's very important to know some law. You know, I'm more than willing to help anybody that needs help.
But before Hayes gets out, he's trying to help as many of his fellow inmates as possible. He's a jailhouse lawyer. His status is actually enshrined in law, says prisoner rights attorney Charles Carbone.
As a non-lawyer, you cannot pretend to be a lawyer for somebody else if you're a free citizen. And that is because that's called the unauthorized practice of law. You got to go to law school and you got to pass the bar if you want to pretend to be a lawyer, except if you're in prison. That the odd exception in prison is that you can act, quote unquote, as somebody else's lawyer. That's why jailhouse lawyers exist. So it's not just representing yourself. You could actually represent somebody else as a jailhouse lawyer, and that's perfectly legal as long as you're doing it in prison. And with one caveat, you got to get permission from the prison in order to do that, and you can't charge any money for it.
The most successful jailhouse lawyers get themselves and fellow inmates freed. But then what? Wow, this is nice. Hector Oropeza sits at the kitchen table in his new apartment just south of San Francisco.
As a jailhouse lawyer, I was able to help a lot of people tell their story.
30 years ago, he was sent to prison for murder, but he wrote his own appeal and got himself out.
Whatever the truth is, you got the DA's truth, you got the defense truth, and you got the truth. What comes in the middle of it?
It wasn't easy to articulate that truth. Oropeza says when he first went to prison, it was all about sitting in his cell and doing time. Then one day, an attorney slipped him a legal self-help book. He devoured it.
I'm not just a guy sitting in a box for all these years. I'm a guy in a box educating himself.
Oropeza says the book changed his life, not just because it helped with his own case. He learned how to represent other inmates.
By doing jailhouse lawyer work, you give someone the opportunity to tell their truth, what they believe happened, and hopefully win, you know, and go home.
He got 12 of his fellow inmates out on parole. But now that he's on the outside, he legally can't represent anyone, and the guys who are still locked up have no one else.
I left like 100 cases pending somewhere. I know, you come out here, they don't give you a car. They give you $200, and that's gone the first day.
He can't practice the law without being admitted to the State Bar Association, and that's unlikely with his felony conviction.
I need to get paid. I need to pay my bills, but they don't understand. I don't think they don't see the experience what comes with what I was taking so many cases on, and that should count for something. That experience should count for something.
Eventually, Oropeza says he'd like to go to college and get an education that would prepare him for a law degree, but that's expensive. For now, he's getting part-time work wherever he can.
It'd be nice to get some formal training, though, and I am working on that right now. Once I get that, I know I can compete with these guys. I know that.
By these guys, Oropeza means lawyers, just lawyers, no jailhouse attached. For Life of the Law, I'm Nancy Mullane.
Well, there you go. That's what happens. People don't study the law at all, don't know anything about the law, don't know how to protect themselves from the law or corrupt law, and before you know it, you're in a slammer for decades and decades, and if you don't do it right, you're never going to get out of there. I'm afraid that Matt Hale, even though he had the best intents and he went to law school, I think they may have not filed his papers exactly the way they should be filed, and I don't think his appeal is going anyplace. Now, don't tell him I said that, because I don't want to make him feel bad, or him or his mother, but he's going to have a hell of an uphill fight to ever get out of there, as a lot of the other guys who are racial and who are in prison already know. Now, a friend of mine who worked with me for several years, he's been dead now for quite a while, is Don Musgrove, and Don was a National Socialist from the San Francisco area. He actually operated for a while as George Lincoln Rockwell's, one of his bodyguards when George Lincoln Rockwell was on the West Coast. And he was also part of the Oakland Suicide Squad. And I don't know whether you've heard me talk about that before, but that was about 8 or 9 National Socialist heavy-duty street fighter types that lived in an apartment in Oakland, right in the middle of the black ghetto, with a swastika flying right out the window of the apartment, and none of them ever had major problems. And when Huey Newton was strutting around with the Black Panthers, they didn't wait for the Black Panthers to come down to talk to them. The Oakland Suicide Squad went to the headquarters of the Black Panthers, armed, and called them out. Come on out here. Come on out here and fight. And Huey Newton said, we got no problem with you. We ain't going to come out there. We ain't coming out there. We got no quarrel with you. So the National Socialists went back home. Well, anyhow, that's where Don Musgrove got his early training, and he had cystic fibrosis, one of the oldest patients to ever have cystic fibrosis, and he'd been tossed in jail quite a number of times and almost died because of his cystic fibrosis, but he knew he was not a cop lover, I'll tell you that, and he became a jailhouse lawyer, and he was good, and he saved my ass on several occasions, not necessarily on cases, but advice. He gave me some excellent advice and took me from being somewhat naive right-winger to being a very perceptive and cautious type person. So anyhow, that's try to help people that are in prison, you know, white separatists and like that. But the problem is, most of the damage they do to themselves before they get in. In court, they allow and they have a poor defense, if any defense at all. And also, they talk too much. And most people, I've said many times before, talk themselves right into the hard time. And even guys who I've preached to for years about it, they still, when they get jacked up by the federales, they spill their guts. And you're never going to get anywhere by doing that. And so anyhow, you need to study law. There's a lot of great stuff, books around, and to help you in case you get in trouble. But so I'm going to play this kind of stuff every once in a while and hope there's people out there that listen to Uncle Tommy. Yeah. Now, I told you about jury nullification. I played you some recordings on that, but don't forget that, because if a group of people on a jury decide they don't want to convict somebody, they don't They don't have to convict him, no matter what the judge says. But getting a bunch of people, 12 people on a jury nowadays to not be afraid of the system and buck the system is going to be pretty hard to do. But just remember one thing. On a major felony, it only takes one juror to say no, he's not guilty. And no matter how much they pester you in the jury room, just stick to it. And they're not going to get a conviction. And so that's something to always remember. It only takes one in a felony trial. Anyhow, you can go up to this website, lifeofthelaw.com, and hear all kinds of information, recorded information and written that will help you stay out of the clutches of demand. Of demand. Remember, police officers or federal agents or anybody else, they know what you know about the law in about 5 seconds after they confront you. And usually, if you do know the law and you know how to protect yourself, many times they'll leave you alone. You know, I got so excited over all this activity around here, I forgot to give you the date. It is July the 15th, 2014, and it's Tears Day. What a busy day. I know no sooner got the television boys out of here and my septic tank cleaner guy came, and he's the son of an old schoolmate of mine, and for you people who don't know about septic tanks, that's when you got septic tank, you don't pay sewer bills. But every once in a while, you got to call the honey wagon. I told the guy, I said, you know, your truck looks really nice, it's a modern truck and everything. I said, a lot better than that manure spreader I used to pull around for a big farm owner here close to me that I worked for when I was a little kid. And that was back when we spread manure on the fields, back when we had natural biodegradable fertilizer instead of all this cancer-causing crap that there's putting out today on this stuff. And those manure spreaders back then, they'd fill them up with the feces from the barn, from the hogs and the cattle and sheep or whatever, chickens, load them up, and that thing would go across the field, be throwing that stuff 10, 15, 20 feet in the air. Yeah, but it was a hell of a lot more better ecology then than there is now, I'll tell you that. Anyhow, back to our show here. Oh, I forgot to tell you, and I've told it before, the story about Don Musgrove and Rockwell and San Francisco and the Oakland Suicide Squad, but one thing I did forget to tell you, George Lincoln Rockwell wanted to come out there to California because he felt safer with the Oakland Suicide Squad boys in their apartment. That's where he finished the book, This Time the World. And he needed a quiet place where he could finish the book and feel safe doing it. And as we found out, he was a lot safer in California with the Oakland Suicide Squad than he was back at the headquarters in Virginia. Now, I wonder why they're so anxious to get all these religions together. Yeah. A leap of faith is on the agenda in Berlin, where a visionary project for the interfaith dialogue launched as the House of One hopes to bring Christians, Jews, and Muslims to worship under one roof from 2018. In a country where interreligious dialogue has spun numerous initiatives for Christian-Jewish dialogue set up after World War II and post-9/11, the time after a series of four coordinated terrorist attacks upon the United States in New York City and Washington, D.C., on September 11, 2001. Public opinion in Germany has yet to come to terms with how it was possible for 6 million Jews to be sale-made by the citizens of a Christian nation. Well, we're not going to accept that 6 million number, of course, but there were a lot of Jews that were killed. There's no doubt about that. But Jews are great exaggerators. Sharing a symbolic shoe-bearing ritual in the sandy soil of an empty plot of wasteland in Berlin's historic center, not far from the building site for New Humboldt Cultural Forum, an unlikely trio, a pastor, a rabbi, and an imam, stood side by side in June, thanking the shared non-existent God of the three Abrahamic faiths they hoped to come and pray to once the bold church synagogue mosque in one building is completed. That ought to be a three-ring circus, I'll tell you that. Just wait a minute. Where am I at here? Rabbi Tovia Ben Chorum, Imam Kedar Sankey, and Pastor Gregor Holberg, the House of One's initiators, are poised to become Berlin's own tolerance trio for as long as it lasts. A term which refers to the U.S. Interfaith National Conference of Christians and Jews in the 1930s, whereby a rabbi, a priest, and a minister, the Tolerance Trio, were dispatched to cities around the country in order to facilitate interfaith understanding, right, promoting the idea of America built on harmony among Jews, Catholics, and Protestants. Well, I don't think you see too much harmony among these sects that are all over the country. They fight like cats and dogs, and you ask one what he thinks of the other church, and he says, they don't have it right, they got it all wrong. When in 1943 a German U-boat torpedoed the USS Dorchester, and it began to sink, a rabbi, a priest, and a minister helped to distribute life vests until they ran out and finally gave up their own to save more soldiers. Survivors saw the men praying arm in arm as the ship went down. Well, why can't you do that without believing in spooks in the sky? I mean, it's not really abnormal for people who don't believe in spooks in the sky to give up their life to save other people. So why is this such a big deal? Well, you know what? I don't have much respect for it because these people are all expecting a payoff. The rabbi, the priest, and the minister, they're all expecting to get paid off by sitting at the right and left hand and maybe on top of the baby Jesus. Whereas someone who does not believe in spooks in the sky, who gives up his or her life for to save people around them. Now, there's a real hero to me. Yes. Standing on firmer ground, the House of One's management board, which includes Roland Stolte, House of One's project manager, Siebrild, well, I'm not going to go through all this crap. Anyhow, let's see if there's any more to this stuff. Set up in 2011 as the Association House of Prayer and Learning, Petroplatz, Berlin, the Church Synagogue Mosque Project is envisioned as a uniquely independent public venture, free from official supporters and partisan donations. Well, they're tax exempt, probably. The backers and supporters hope to raise 43.5 million euros by 2016. Through by collaborative crowdfunding, encouraging everyone to donate. Well, keep the money in your pockets, people. You're going to need it. Starting from a single symbolic brick of 10 euros, at least 10 million euros will be required to complete a first phase of the project, which will not draw funds from the German church tax. Oh. Well, you know, if there actually had been a Jesus, which there wasn't, the way they talk about him, he didn't have a church. He didn't have a building. He just went around and got food from different people who were followers of his, and they'd set the table for him, and they'd give him a place to sleep and stuff like that. They never had any of these big churches or anything. I don't know, but what do you think about that? When excavations in 2009 revealed remnants of Berlin's earliest known church, the Petrikirche, and a Latin school dating back to 1350, the pastor Gregor Humbarg became convinced that this coincidence, coupled with Berlin's increasing multicultural demography, in other words, race mixing, and a cosmopolitan, that means Judaized, re-Judaized terrain, provide the right humus for a project of this magnitude. Wow. The decision to locate the House of One right on this archaic and sacred bit of soil sends very strong signal. Oh yeah? And a message about the commitment to peace, multi-faith dialogue in Germany, said Tim Renner, Berlin's State Secretary of Cultural Affairs. That's funnier than hell. I mean, the various religions are fighting tooth and nail. They're killing each other by droves. Christian Muslims killing Islamic Muslims. Islamic Muslims killing Christian Muslims. All over the world. I mean, down there in India, all those different sects, they're killing each other. And they're saying that religion is the answer. Berlin's interfaith team are confident that a new kind of shared covenant and promised land with God, Allah, and Jehovah is possible in many. Oh boy, oh boy. Quote, a place that has darkness in its past has potential for peace in its future. As a Jew, I associate Berlin with pain and deep wounds. But that is not the end of the story, is how Ben Chorin describes his commitment to the project. For me, Berlin is all about remembrance and rebirth of the kikes. Ah, that's enough of that stuff. They don't seem to understand that the imam is in the driver's seat, that at the way things are going, the Islamics are going to just take over Berlin. They're not going to need any Jews or Christians to help them. Now, talk about being schizophrenic people, the Jews. I think that's where the term came from, along with diabetes. It's amazing. It's amazing how they are the ones who, or at least a lot of them, are the ones who spearhead one world government, one world religion, one world everything, that's all mixed, race mix. There is no white race, you know, they're just humans and all that. And now they're getting caught just like they did in helping to create World War One and made tremendous obscene profits from World War One that led to World War Two. But first of all, it led to Adolf Hitler. And if the Jews didn't like him, they shouldn't have created him, because the shit that they pulled World War One and under the Weimar Republic is what gave Germany Hitler. I mean, come on. So here they are now in Europe. You know, let them all come in. Feel sorry for all these Muslim people, you know. And now the Muslim people are kicking their ass. Protests are often said to turn nasty, but this one started nasty. Thousands of pro-Palestinian demonstrators marched in Paris on July 13th, chanting slogans like, "Death to the Jews," "Hitler was right," and "Jihad, Jihad, Jihad." Some received enthusiastic cheers as they carried a replica of a Palestinian missile that crashed into an Israeli nursery. This was the peaceful part of the demonstration against Israel's self-defense in Gaza. Later in the evening, things turned nastier as a mob left the main demonstration to attack the Don Isaac Avraham Avinel Synagogue. About 150 people were inside the synagogue praying to the Jehovah to save their lives, man. Holding a memorial ceremony for three Israeli teenagers recently murdered. And I wonder if the Mossad did that just to get things going. Oh, you don't think there's people that are that corrupt and vicious and nasty? The world's got plenty of people that would do something like that. It was like it was Intifada. One of the people inside the building told Israel's Channel 2 News the protesters attacked the building with stones and bricks. Oh, wow. Anyhow. They were determined to enter, and the police did not have enough forces, said the French Jewish journalist Elaine Azria. Only five policemen stood outside. The rest had blue flu and stayed home. The Protection Service of the Jewish Community, the Jewish Defense League, and Beitar organizations created by Jews to protect Jews from anti-Semitic attacks saved the day, according to Azra. Well, where in the hell is your golem at? You know, you guys, you can invent a golem to protect you, right? No? Okay. Quote, thank God they were there because the protesters had murder on their minds and it took a while before police reinforcement arrived. He said, well, what would you think if you're Palestinian and they were bombing your houses and everything else and killing your kids, keeping you in a concentration camp, the largest open-air concentration camp down there, and it's your country, it's not the Kikes country. All the bullshit about their claim and God gave it to them is such a lie. Another witness said the protesters used bats and chairs from nearby cafe to try to overpower the guards. Well, they didn't bomb them, didn't shoot them. That's just a fair fight, baseball bats and chairs. Quote, the Palestinians had rocks, glass, axes, knives. They were armed, and I made sure that no one would leave the synagogue. In order to protect the lives of our people, local Jewish community leader Serge Ben-Haim told IDF Radio. Ben-Haim said the attack was a watershed moment. What existed in the past could no longer continue, he said. We could have had something like Kristallnacht. Actually, Kristallnacht was fairly mild. They broke out a bunch of windows, painted some Stars of David on the fronts of Jewish stores, but other than that, and then Hitler had a lot of the people that caught punished for that too. They'll never admit it. Quote, we skirted a true catastrophe yesterday, Ben-Haim continued. Today's not yesterday. We must analyze what happened. There are some very red lights going on lately, unquote. Well, it might be because you're always pushing that brotherly love bullshit to take advantage of everybody, and now it's coming back to kick your ass. Ben-Haim is right. The attack was most dramatic of a series of attacks on Jews in France. The second synagogue was also attacked during the protests. Well, at least they haven't put anybody in an oven yet. In the procession, this event, I believe that 90% are Muslims and Arabs, wrote French journalist Jonathan Simon Selim, who saw the protests. Well, you wait a while and the regular French guys are going to get involved in it, you know. As Selim pointed out, there have been 200,000 deaths in Syria, yet the protesters gathered in Paris to denounce the 150 dead in Gaza. Well, you got all these Muslims running around France, and you have no control over them, so what are you going to do? And you, all you progressive liberals out there, that's what you wanted. We got to share the land and share the food and share the wealth and share everything. Share the women, yeah. The mob was motivated by an irrational, I don't know about that, hatred of Jews. Such hatred has been getting worse across Europe. to see where this is leading, read our article, What 79 Million Europeans Think of Jews, from the latest print edition of the Trumpet magazine. This came from the Jews' Own magazine. So anyhow, I guess, how do they say that? The chickens have come home to roost again. And they always will, as long as the Jews keep acting like they're acting, and like they've acted forever, and playing this always the victim, always the victim. No reason why they pick on us. They just pick on us because we're Jews. You know better than that, don't you? Is what Jews do is the problem, not who Jews are. I see they got the Jewish Defense League over there supposedly protecting the Jews. Well, if the Jewish Defense League over there is anything like the Jewish Defense League that we used to fight and beat up in the streets of L.A., Jews are in for a big problem, because if it'd be like Irv Rubin over there with a bunch of his ragtag the little kikes that even the Jews of the normal Jews of L.A. hated their guts. If they're depending on these Jewish Defense League guys to save Jews in France, that's a joke. I picked up on something here in some of the email going back and forth and some of the comments about what's going on in Eastern Europe and Ukraine and so forth. Somebody's picked up on our created term that we started with, Hollywood Nazis. I don't think anybody ever used that before I started using it. Now it's cropping up all over the place to delineate between true national socialists and funny guys. Wait a minute. What's that? You know what? One thing you got to remember is leaders don't have much to do with making of the times. It's the times that makes the leaders. So all those people out there that are always griping about Adolf Hitler, he was created by the times, not the reverse. And of course, people like Adolf Hitler come around again. I mean, not in the same way, but if you're looking at negative stuff, look at George Bush Jr. I'm not comparing him to Hitler, because Hitler had far more morals than George Bush Jr. But the thing is that the times create the leaders and the people, no matter how rotten or how good they are. It's the times. It's the chemistry of the times.
To break up a huge fight at Montrose Beach. You won't believe what that beach looks like now. And the State Street News. I'll get back to those headlines in a moment. First, though, Tim McGill has their forecast. Officers were hurt when they responded to a big fight at Montrose Beach. The officers were hit with bottles and debris. One officer was cut, then treated and released from the hospital. Another was hit in the head, but did not go to the hospital. 9 people were arrested. A man was found shot dead on the sidewalk overnight in the Englewood neighborhood. It happened at around 12:30 in the 1500 block of 72nd Street. Officers were responding to a call of shots fired when they found the victim on the sidewalk. He died from a gunshot wound to the head. No arrests have been made. At least 4 people were killed and 29 wounded in the city since Friday. Chicago aldermen witnessed a murder in Rogers Park this weekend. 28-year-old Will Lewis was shot in the 1300 block west of Vaughn Avenue Saturday afternoon. He was standing near a bus stop when he was shot in the back. Alderman Joe Moore was standing nearby when he heard those shots fired.
Having never been witnessing a gun being fired during the commission of a crime, I'll tell you one thing. I didn't notice too much more than just the gun itself. But I did notice that it was being fired by someone who appeared very young, probably younger than my 17-year-old son.
Authorities say Lewis wasn't involved in any gang activity. Family members say they believe it was a case of mistaken identity. According to family, he moved to the Rogers Park neighborhood 2 weeks ago. He was set to start a new photography job within days. Police are now questioning possible suspects, but no charges have been filed. Chicago police are holding this man, 53-year-old Derek Williams, for kidnapping and raping a woman last Tuesday. The woman visited Williams' storefront business at 125th and Ashland, but police say he refused to let her leave. He struck her face, slashed her thumb, and sexually assaulted her, according to police. When he let her have her cell phone back, she texted a warning to a friend who then called police. A police officer from Gary will be laid to rest today, 8 days after he was shot to death in his patrol car. Visitation services were held yesterday for Jeffrey Westerfield. Hundreds turned out at the Genesis Convention Center to honor Westerfield for his 19 years of service.
We have people in this world that's taking care of us. The officers do not get the recognition that they need, and they keep us safe and everything, and so do the fire department, and it was my way of saying thank you for protecting me with your life.
Westerfield's funeral procession begins at 11:15 this morning, and it's expected to tie up traffic in Gary for several hours. He will be buried at the Chapel Lawn Cemetery in Schererville. Police are expected to file charges against the man suspected of murdering Officer Westerfield. He's already being held on an unrelated charge. Mayor Emanuel's office says internal investigation files about police misconduct will now be made public. The police department will release the files if they're requested through the Freedom of Information Act. Previously, misconduct investigations were treated as personnel matters, which are exempt from FOIA requests. Any records released will be edited to make sure that no information is released that might compromise investigations or witness confidentiality. Another weekend of deadly gun violence has Governor Quinn pushing for tougher laws. Quinn and Congresswoman Robin Kelly were in Morgan Park yesterday. That's where Tanya Gunn was shot to death a week ago. Quinn and Kelly support the so-called Illinois Public Safety Act. That bill would ban assault weapons, limit high-capacity ammunition, and expand background checks. CTU President Karen Lewis could give Mayor Rahm Emanuel a...
Gee, I almost forgot our Chicago Black KKK report there. And those crimes were, you know, like Monday and Tuesday night. Monday night and Sunday. Supposed to all be in church praying, you black people. Yeah, that's a little sample of the fun and games that the Black Ku Klux Klan plays around with up there in Chi-Town, man. I almost forgot that report. Incidentally, the alderman that was standing there watching a kid shoot to death another black kid just stood there and watched. I mean, you know, the kid was maybe 13, 14 years old. Well, I guess he just didn't want to risk his life, man, saving a black person. Well, that's it for today, boys and girls. I've exhausted my intellectual capacity. Yeah, so I'll be back here tomorrow on Wotan's Day, David Lane's favorite day. In the meantime, watch where you stand. Don't stand at bus stops very long. And stay out of the way of the Black Ku Klux Klan, even though they give white people a free ride. Yeah, they just go after black people. So you're probably safe. But you still better be careful. Yeah, okay. 14-5.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds when we're together?
Just sing a song and dream.
happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the cross when we're together? Sing a song and bring the sunny weather. Happy trails to you till we meet again. Who cares about the clouds when we're together?
Just sing a song and bring the sunny weather.
Happy trails.